You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Migrating songbirds seem to be giving us information about the effects of climate change. Do you remember this conversation? We started it last year with Dr. Michael McGran from Jessup University. His idea is that birds are migrating sooner because of warming temperatures in many regions, and he's been gathering data. He's planning a new expedition this summer. Dr. McGran is the chair of the William Jessup University's Institute for Biodiversity and the Environment, and he's here again in the studio. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Beth. Thanks
Glad
for having us
here.
On.
Dr. McGran's former research assistant, Holly Prusmeyer, is here too. She's moved on to more scientific research, but always happy to talk about birds. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Dr. McGran, will you outline the picture of climate change and migratory birds as you believe it's happening?
Sure. A concern that we have and kind of the motivation for much of the research that we're doing along the Pacific Crest Trail is that some groups of birds are potentially migrating, or they are adjusting their singing behavior to earlier times in the season. And we want to study to the extent that that actually is happening. So our data can show to what extent that birds may be singing earlier in the season and whether we'll be able to track that change along the Pacific Crest Trail. So that's kind of the motivation of our study.
Last time you were here, you explained that your first bit of exploring this was in 2004, but in 2006, you and your wife, Amy, hiked the PCT and at that time began collecting data.
Yeah, so that's where this kind of stems from my PhD dissertation, where my wife and I, we hiked the entire length of the Pacific Crest Trail in California, which is about 1,700 miles. And so the way that we did that is we stopped at every 10 minutes of hiking and we collected data on birds and their habitats across 3,578 sites across 1,700 miles, all in a single field season for about 4.5 months. And so that kind of led from one thing to another and stemmed additional collaborations where we eventually started deploying automated bird recorders in addition to doing what we call point counts, where I do surveys for birds at sites and count all the birds that I see and hear. We also deployed these automated bird recorders. And what's really neat about these recorders is it records the singing bird community, and that enables us to kind of track when their peak in singing activity is occurring throughout the breeding season.
We have a clip that gives us a sample of a piece of collected data, and I believe this is from PCT, so let's take a listen. Yeah. Holly, let me turn to you. What do you hear in that sound?
I heard a little bit of a white-breasted nuthatch in the background. That almost sounds like a squeaky toy. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, there's actually several species in that recording. There's acorn woodpecker. There's Pacific slope flycatcher, western tanager. There's actually, that's a great example of the kinds of recordings that we generate. Several species singing. Some of those are long-distance migratory birds, like the western tanager, for example. And so those are the kinds of birds or species that we're most concerned about in terms of whether they're able to adapt to an earlier onset of spring by adjusting their breeding behaviors, their singing activity. So.
How does recording the sound alone tell you what's happening in the patterns?
So what it does is that we can actually statistically analyze, interpret those recordings. We download the recordings after we've deployed those devices. And then we can statistically model when the peak in singing activity occurs for each species, like at what date during the breeding season it occurs. And so we have data now that spans almost 10 years now on the PCT, where we have demonstrated in some of our earlier publications where we can actually track whether these groups of birds, long-distance migrants, resident birds, birds that are here year-round in California, whether they're adapting that. And there's some evidence in our initial results that suggests that long-distance migrants are less able to adapt their singing behaviors to variation in temperature, to variation are just less able to adapt to those changes.
Have dates changed then for some species?
Well, we don't have enough. Although I have data that spans, I haven't had the opportunity yet to really dig into that data because it takes time and resources. But I hope to do that in coming years. So we don't have data to confirm that just yet. But we do have data that spans where my hunch is that we should be able to show something over the past decade, whether there is any adjustment between those groups of birds or not.
Holly, tell me about being part of the expedition, which a lot of time is in remote areas of the Sierra.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience because you have to learn to adjust to the environmental conditions and just the wilderness backpacking lifestyle that's out there. So we would start by waking up at 5 a.m. or even before then, like 30 minutes before the sunrise, put on these 50-pound backpacks, not only with necessities, but with scientific equipment that we had to lug around with us. And then we would hit the trail and hike about 15 miles a day. It may have been grueling at first physically, but your body adjusts to it and you learn to love to see everything, like the sunrise and then hiking over peaks to see the whole landscape around you. And it really benefited just the experience of being a field researcher. It was fantastic. And William Jessup really provided those experiences along with Professor mm-hmm. McGran preparing us for this. So it was an amazing experience and I would do it all over again. Mm-hmm.
What did you hear in listening for songbirds and species that was new or unexpected to you?
I'm not exactly sure because we haven't really analyzed the data, but I took an ornithology class with Professor McGran, so I learned to recognize some of the birds that we heard out there. It was amazing just to hear the diversity. And if you sit there silently, you could just hear the uproar of birds all of the sudden once they don't think people are around. So it's amazing, that experience. But I also collected other data out there just besides listening to birds. Like we started taking samples of eDNA, which is an environmental DNA that is found in water sources. And then I also collected data on herpetiles, which are reptiles. So as we're walking along the trail, I would pinpoint reptiles that we would see and collect data on that, and then also vegetation data. So it was a full array of data that we were collecting.
Yeah, so Holly's job was primarily to classify the habitat and the vegetation. And so she was often kind of hiking alongside me as I was counting the birds and making observations on the wildlife and deploying the automated bird recorders. Yeah.
He is pretty remarkable, Holly, isn't he, in terms of being somewhat of a bird whisperer, but recognizing species?
Yes, definitely.
So will you give me a glimpse of how it was to work on this project with him?
Fantastic. So we would be hiking, and he would actually have us listen to what birds were out there, and then he would identify them for us. So we would start to correlate the bird vocalizations with the identification of these birds. Most of them I still don't remember. So whenever he listens to the little radio clip and identifies all the different bird species within that, it just fascinates me. So he really motivates his students and pushes them to just expand their whole knowledge of the environment and what's out there.
Could we try something? Mark, can you play the clip again, but let's keep Dr. McGran's mic up, and would you narrate a little just as your brain is going with what you're hearing in the birds? Okay, here goes.
So that squeaky toy sound is acorn whippecker. That whistle is a Pacific slope flycatcher. Also have hermit warbler singing in the background, kind of that burry fast-paced call or fast tempo. There's also a brown creeper that was also singing in the background as well. And the hermit warbler in particular, it has an interesting song to it. It has it has two types of songs. It has a Category 1 and a Category 2 song. And the Category 2 song is what it uses to defend its territory, so it's more aggressive sounding, versus the Category 1, which is more of an advertising song. So
got that?
Quite a diversity of going on there.
Can you whistle them? Do you give the
examples? No, I can't speak bird. I can only identify or understand bird.
You're listening to William Jessup Science Professor Dr. Michael McGran with his former research assistant, Holly Prusmeyer, who has gone on to do more scientific research and is applying to grad school right now. There is an ambitious plan for research this summer. It's the next phase of the expedition. And I think we gleaned from Holly's description that you're not looking for grad students or PhDs to do this work, that students can come in at any level and be part of it.
Yeah, I mean, actually in the program right now, I have about a dozen students, and one of them is a theater major. So it's open across majors. As long as there's a passion for the science, making observations and following the protocols, I can work across majors and actually across universities. I've had students from UC Davis. I've had students from other liberal arts universities across the country. So our goal is to recruit up to 30 students or even more. And so if we get to 30 students, we can do surveys along the whole length of California, from Mexico to Oregon. Right now, we're planning for next summer. I have about a dozen students and two other research faculty working with me doing a 400-mile section from the Mojave Desert through Sequoia Kings Canyon in the Southern Sierra and into Devil's Postpiles, where we'll come out just south of Yosemite. So that'll be a 400-mile stretch where we'll do about 1,000 survey sites and deploy the automated recorders there, collect more data so that we can track bird behavior and singing behavior ultimately as they're adjusting to climate change and other sources of environmental change, land use change, drought, whatever it might be. Yeah.
Are you looking for more students to join this summer?
Certainly, yes. We're still recruiting. We still have time to recruit students. And if there is anybody interested, they can reach out to me at our website. If you just Google Institute for Biodiversity and the Environment, you'll find contact information on how to reach me and more information about the program there.
We'll post a link as well.
Great.
To make it a little easier. Let me shift to a bit of the bigger political view right now and the president's administration essentially dismissing climate change.
Yeah.
For someone like you that is immersed in the study and the data collection, what does this news mean?
Well, it's disappointing. And so, you know, my view is that I wish politically, whether Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, we can agree with the science, what the science is telling us, that climate change is happening and that more research is needed. But my hope is that we can all contribute to the conversation. And so not disagree with the science, but contribute to the conversation regardless of our political persuasion. And so that's my hope going forward. And I think there needs to be more science done because we're showing our approach often in a lot of management decisions is kind of a one-size-fits-all approach to climate change. And what some of my research is showing, because it spans across the multiple regions and ecoregions, is that there's species are responding differently to climate change depending on what region they're found in, depending on the climate of that region. The response isn't the same. So a one-size-fits-all approach may not be appropriate, and we need to make more region-specific approaches to climate change. So in response to your question, my hope is that regardless of our political persuasion, we can agree with the science, support the science, and all contribute to the conversation and finding solutions.
How definitive is your research to you at this point? How convinced are you that climate change is real and it is changing the patterns of species?
Well, I'm certainly convinced that climate change is real, and I'm certainly convinced that it's impacting species distributions, whether they're shifting up in elevation or down in elevation, depending on which region we're talking about, or north in latitude, or they're making adjustments in different ways. So I'm certainly convinced of that, but we need more data over long term to kind of figure out what those finer scale adaptations that species are making within specific regions are. So we need a finer scale data that's region specific instead of kind of a global or one size fits all approach.
Holly, are you at the point beyond simply collecting data that it's you understand why it's important for you personally? That you're invested as a person in these bigger questions?
Yeah, very much so. One of my goals, hopefully as I move forward into graduate school, is to further this research and actually analyze that data, looking with GIS on how those distributions of species are actually changing. So hopefully I can stick with this and progress upon the research.
What would you say to a student just hearing about this? It is a rigorous expedition. It does demand time and space out of what is typically free time for a student because it happens in the summer. So I guess I'm asking you to make the case for why this experience is really a worthwhile one.
Right. As you start with this project, it may seem grueling, but the end is so empowering because you realize, looking back on it, you've accomplished all this work and this hard effort, and it makes it worth it because you end up with so many memories that are fantastic. Like, I remember going into the high altitudes and seeing marmots, and they like perch up and scream at you, and I still laugh about that. And then we also slid down snowbanks. So it's not just work, but it's also fun we're having out there. And the community that you build, you just have long-lasting friendships with those people as well.
Just camping along the way, moving your home night to night, packing up and going on, and then the immersion in nature, I think, is just so remarkable.
So, I mean, Holly's a great example. I mean, one thing I love about Holly is I really got to see the transition in her as she matured academically on this. I really consider this a rite of passage and really take a holistic approach with my students. You know, they develop mentally, they develop emotionally, physically, even spiritually as they spend time in the wilderness. And it's really a culture shock for my students often because the wilderness is a different culture. And you're adapting to that culture, you're adapting to trail life and to that wilderness culture without having the creature comforts that we have, without being plugged into our smartphones all the time. And you gain a real intimate understanding of the ecology of the Pacific Crest Trail and how it varies. It's a diverse trail ranging from deserts to lush forests to high alpine habitats, incredible diversity of wildlife. And so Holly gained an incredibly intimate understanding of that and appreciation of that, that few people have the opportunity, even people who actually thru-hike it, because they're often busy just hiking, kind of staring at their feet the whole time and not making observations. And so we stop at regular intervals and make detailed observations on how that landscape is changing.
Well, again, we'll post a link if anyone's interested in more information or possibly volunteering for this expedition. One last question, Dr. McGran. In the bigger picture, why should anyone think that this is important?
Well, this is, I think our data set is incredibly valuable because I really see the Pacific Crest Trail as this thread that weaves through our wilderness habitats, our mountain landscapes, as sort of a biodiversity barometer, you know, where we can use it to gauge how species are adjusting to climate change and other sources of environmental change, and how their behaviors are adapting to climate change. And so it's an incredibly valuable data set that spans wide-ranging environments. And we're getting data on breeding behaviors and able to track those behaviors using these automated recordings. So I think it's an incredibly valuable data set that is going to produce all kinds of science out of it over the long term that will inform decision making.
Yeah. That's Dr. Michael McGran, science professor and bird expert from William Jessup University, and Holly Prusmeyer, his former research assistant, who's going back on the trip again this summer, I assume?
Possibly.
Possibly. We're working on it. We'll post that link at capradio.org/insight. Thank you both. Thanks for the update. I look forward to the next conversation after this summer's work.
Great. Thank you.
You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.